Remember to keep up with them. One thing I wanted to ask you before I forget it is, I know you belong to Pioneers because I see you there at a meeting. Do you belong to anything, any other organizations in town?
Just the Mining Auxiliary.
Weenie?
Mm-hmm.
Are they having their annual summer picnic this year?
I don't know. I haven't been to a meeting or anything for years. I pay my dues and that's all. But I don't know. I get a little bit fed up with it.
I remember I shocked them all one time. I went to their picnic and I brought some beer. Because that's forbidden in them. I can't imagine a bunch of miners getting together not having beer at their picnic.
Oh, we always had a lot to drink at our dinners.
Thank you.
Want a
pretzel?
Yeah. Maybe I can find something else besides a pretzel.
No, that's fine. For me.
I haven't been able to find decent pretzels anyplace.
He likes these great big things.
Big things are a lot bigger around as your thumb, you know.
Mm-hmm. They're just as bad as peanuts and popcorn. You start eating them, you can't quit.
Ate the last of the mixed nuts today. You better get another can of them.
No wonder you're so fat.
Well,
I only buy those kind at Christmas time.
I had them just before I ate lunch.
What is this, Bruce?
I had a great big can of mixed nuts in the refrigerator.
Besides the Pioneers of Alaska, Bruce, what do you belong to? What organizations?
American Institute of Mining, Metallurgical, and Petroleum Engineers.
It's called AIME.
AIME. Belong to the National Society of Professional Engineers. And the Masonic Fraternity.
I went to Whitey Ware's funeral yesterday, and it was a combination Pioneer and Masonic is a really nice service.
Yeah.
Not that I'm thinking about your dying or anything, but it reminded me
of
that's been about, I think, the third Masonic
certs
I've been to. I mean, they do a nice job.
Pioneers
do too. I like the Pioneer.
It's simple and nice. That must have been a big funeral. We had more flowers from that than we have had from any funeral in years. And there was one bouquet, I bet you it was as big as that table.
Hmm.
I never saw such a huge thing in all my life.
Did they bring them out to the table?
Bring them out the
home. Oh, yeah.
They started that 4 hours ago.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
At first, you know, well, it was during the wintertime they started bringing them out. And we had a few, they didn't like that, take them away. They were from a
table. Well, I guess they brought the Alaska Miners Association too, don't they?
Yeah. But you take the ribbons off and rearrange them, and my gosh, they're beautiful flowers. I don't care whether they've just been to a funeral or what. That doesn't detract from the flowers.
Yeah.
But they get some funny ideas once in a while.
Yeah, well, if they don't.
I guess we'll be the same, if not worse, when we get that age.
I'll tell you, when I get to be 85 and living at the Pioneer home, I'm going to be the crankiest old lady you ever saw in your life.
What for?
I don't know. I think I'm just going to be real cranky. But you know, you just have to evaluate some of these people. Like, get back some of the guests that I'm not to name any names here, but you just have to kind of evaluate the situations because some of them are hurt, overweight, they have arthritis, or they don't sleep at night, or they've got a pain here or there, and you just have to kind of think about that because, I know, some. Well, like this one girl we were talking about earlier. Fuss, 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 gripe, gripe, gripe. If you could just kind of let it go over your head and, you know.
Oh, yeah, you just have to.
They don't really mean it.
What did I hear on the radio the other day about this woman who said, talking about what qualifications a mayor should have?
That was on what's that? Guy on KFAR, Paul Harvey News.
Oh. Yeah, Paul Harvey News.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Of all the things, one of the things he should have would be hemorrhoids, because so he'd show concern.
You know, I heard that. I seldom have cafe R on. I was in the office early and I turned it on to get some news, and I heard that. And that was so funny, I wrote it down in my notebook.
I was going to call up Harold Dillum and ask him.
Three criteria. He said, first, if it's a man who was running for mayor, he must have a dark suit.
Oh, yeah.
Which indicates conservatism. He also must be graying at the temple to indicate that he is mature. He also must have hemorrhoids to show that deep concern.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
He gets off some good ones, that guy.
Yeah, why don't you call Harold and ask him about that?
You remind me of when I was at that meeting that morning at the Travelers Inn, you know, and it was on this Golden Towers thing. Incidentally, I got to go to a meeting Friday on that. But anyway, it was all over, and the Fairbanks bunch were having a hard time to bust up, you know. They, you know, a bunch of contingent had left, and we were sitting there, and Doris South all started to kick about the non-security in the Northward building, and all this, all the people coming in, and they should have security there, and all this sort of thing. And I said, well, I said, we've had a few problems up where we live. I said, these fellows have come in, which they were, a lot of them coming in, you know, and they were parking here on the street, and campers and so forth, and in the parking lot here. But there was one guy out here that was sleeping in a, had kind of a, well, he was sleeping in his car, wasn't he?
Well, you're right across from Carpenter.
Yeah. He was sleeping out here, and he'd move. He'd sleep here, and then he'd sleep over there, and he'd sleep across the street, but he was leaving little bottles of amber liquid along the sidewalk when he would, and I was telling him about this. I said, you're kicking about this. You know, and I said, here's this guy. I said, he leaves these little bottles of amber liquid, and I've got to get my rubber gloves on and take them, you know. No, this thing. And I said, so this morning, I said, I went down to the Pay and Save, over to Pay and Save, and I got a package of clothespins. I said, when he shows up tonight, I'm going to give him a clothespin. That broke up the meeting. Everybody left. The women, they looked at me kind of funny, and then they laughed, and then I broke up the meeting. We all laughed.
I heard about some of those guys camping out, just moving their campers, just driving right into vacant lots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, this lot here was full.
Gee, is it subsided some now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of people working. Mm-hmm. This boy who left today was up from Pennsylvania, spent 5 weeks here with us, just 16. He was one of the boys on the trip last summer. And he got a job working as a laborer out there at University West for $5 an hour. And there were a lot of fellows out there whom he got to know. They're living in the campgrounds around. And one guy, real nice guy, he was out at our place for dinner a couple of times. He'd bring him home every night. I'd take Sandy in to go to work at 7 in the morning, and then I'd go on in to work. And they were just living in their cars. He was living in an old 51 paddle truck he had. And another boy was from Hawaii. He had a tent, and he had a park camp down there. And there are others in the campground kind of keep an eye on it during the day. But there are a lot of them who are potential, you know, hangers-on around the union halls, like out here, who are working now.
Yeah. Well, most of these fellows around here were iron workers, mm-hmm. and some of them left. They just went back outside again. They were here for a month, I guess, or more.
Yeah, a good month. They said
they left.
Just couldn't afford to sit around any longer.
They couldn't afford to wait any longer, mm-hmm. so they left. One of them had his outfit for sale, and one guy flew home. Alan Thompson flew back.
I'd sure like to do some looking around for a camper back for a pickup. Don't you think that'd be a good idea, Jim?
Well, if you want to look for something for sale, go down there by King Leo's. That thing is full.
I noticed that the other day.
And I noticed this morning there were all kinds of them.
3/4-ton pickup that I'd like to get a camper for. Cause
I think that's the only
camp. Half ton?
Mm-hmm. But they come that big. They are made.
I'd rather have one of those
open road things.
Mobile home.
Oh, I would too, but we had the pickup, and it'd be ridiculous to spend a lot of money on a mobile home when we have the pickup and just get a camper for it and take it off in the winter.
Well, we have a pickup there. Bruce has a canopy on it.
We'll just have a canopy on it. Mm-hmm. You never put a canopy on your pickup because it's like a woodshed, you know,
yeah.
Or a closet.
Yeah.
It's always full of junk, you know.
Yeah, right.
I have shovels and tubs and all sorts of junk in the back.
Stuffed dummies?
What?
Stuffed dummies from El Dorado.
Yeah.
Old sourdoughs from El Dorado. That was funny. God, it was funny. Well, to get back to you and how long did you work for the Bureau of Mines?
Oh, almost 25 years.
Well, that's a good stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And you just retired this year?
Yeah, I retired, and I worked for them one time, during the war
during
for a short
war.
Time. And then I went back with them in 54, I guess.
54, 1905,
something like that.
Well, did you graduate from the University of Alaska
yeah.
in 1935?
1935.
That's when it was the first
Alaska
year.
Alaska Agricultural College.
Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines.
He was the last one to get his diploma. He says they were so glad to get rid of him, they changed the name.
How come you were the last one? Because your name is...
T. Oh, the
T.
Yeah. Happened to be in no other names afterwards, I guess.
In the fall of 35, they changed it.
To the University of Alaska?
July of 35, yeah. I think.
Well, I mean, when the fall season opened, it was the University of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a historic note. Did you note that, Jim?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
See, you graduated from the University of Alaska. He graduated.
I know.
Yeah. Well, when I was at Cashin's retirement program, you know, that time.
Yeah.
They asked for everybody that was graduated from the University of Alaska, and I wouldn't stand up. And Betty Harrop said she was standing up, Betty Clark alongside, and she was standing up, and I says, I will not. I said, I was graduated from Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines, so the Master of Ceremonies heard me, and then he asked for everybody who was that. That was the only one that stood up for a while, and Betty got up, because she graduated the same year I did.
Yeah. Betty Clark did?
Yeah, and then also, what's her name? Dwayne Hall.
Edith
Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Rogge. She was there too. She stood up, I guess.
How am I doing?
They all stood up, and then when they got back up again, when I
yeah. So you, after you graduated, though, you didn't go, you worked for the Bureau of Mines during the war for a period?
Yeah.
But
well,
after you graduated from college, then you were married soon afterwards, right?
Yeah. We were married in
that fall.
August.
40 years ago next month.
40 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 40 years.
25 years for Jim and me next month. What date were you married?
22nd of August.
22nd. Well, we're going out to the point at Point Barrow and have a wedding reception, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. That's the way to do it.
Sure, huh?
Sure, I've invited everybody to come up as long as he buys his own airplane ticket.
Were you married in Barrow?
Yeah. While you're down this time, Jim, we've got to make some definite plans on that little potlatch we're going to have. Libby's going to go up.
Is she?
Sure. We've got to have some family at our wedding anniversary. I mean, after 25 years, you know. 25
years
of
a good start.
I know. But think of what he's had to live with all this time. Anyway, you worked in mining? Did you work for any company?
Or? Well, just when I was going to school.
Mm-hmm.
But then I worked for Patty McRae Interest for a good many years. Out of
up
on Woodchopper, Coal Creek, and out of Dawson.
Is that the same Woodchopper by Manly, or the wood?
No, it's the one up on the Yukon.
By Circle. Eagle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
up
Circle.
Circle.
Yeah. It's between Circle and Eagle.
Patty McRae?
Well, they had several companies, Alluvial Golds Incorporated, Gold Plasters Incorporated, Good Plaster Exploration, they had Clear Creek Plasters, Canadian Plasters, well, I worked for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I was on, as an engineer on several.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew exactly what. Sometimes I'd get a check from Olivia Gold, sometimes Gold Placers, and Good Pasture Exploration, Clear Cook Placers, and so forth. But they were all held by one group, Patty and General McCray. I don't know. I just don't know who all the stockholders were. Mostly McCray, I guess, and his family out of Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
General McCray, 80 McCray.
And then
I worked for Arctic Circle Exploration out of Nome, out of Seward Peninsula, and Live and Good I worked for Live and Good Placers and also Callahan and Pink Lake Company. And Brinker Johnson.
What was that? Live and Good area?
Yeah.
Well, was Live and Good a pretty good sized town then?
No.
Just a camp?
Just a camp. Mm-hmm.
When was the road built? It was built in 36,
wasn't it? Yeah, 35, 36.
30 something, yeah.
36, yeah.
I think it was finished in 37, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's when it was.
Then I run the dredge over on the Salter for Brinker Johnson, too.
Did you ever work on that dredge out there at Cripple Creek?
No.
Esther?
No.
No, it's nice now, the new road, the new Nenana Highway that goes this way from Esther, not up around. If you look down there, you can see that whole big dredge pond and the big dredge. And
yeah, that's what Art was saying the
before,
other day.
Before, you couldn't see it, but now you can see it from the road.
Well, then you stripping pile that they put up there, it makes a perfect highway.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus, really.
Is that where it is?
Yeah, it goes right across that.
Yeah.
That road to Nenana is nice. I drove down there a week ago, Sunday.
Conveyor.
Yeah, right.
What's your grandson's name?
Carl, spelled with a K.
Carl Thomas. How did I guess the Thomas part? He's four, almost four.
Uh-huh.
Getting smart. Yeah, getting smart in my old age. One thing I wanted to ask you, Bruce, when you were out roaming around the countryside in your mining operations, did you ever have any close calls with a bear?
Oh, several.
You can tell you a lot of bear stories.
Well, tell me a couple of bear stories.
A couple of bear stories?
Yeah, I mean, you really had some good close ones?
Oh, sure.
Well, tell me one.
Well,
or two, or three.
Well, the one, probably the most active one was when I was out of Ruby, when we were doing some exploration work out of a beaver creek. Well, that's about 15 miles out of Ruby. There were three of us, Bob Kemp and Doug Huber, myself, and to establish a campsite. There was an old log cabin there, and it was pretty tough shape, so we decided we'd pitch a couple of tents. So we took we had a bulldozer and part of our equipment, and we cleaned out a sizable area around the cabin and around two, enough room for pitching two tents, one we cooked in and one we slept in. The log cabin, the lower logs had rotted away, and it settled down and left the floor about 6 inches higher than the door sill. So we had a little trouble opening the door and getting inside the thing, but there was a stove in it and some bunks in it, and but the roof leaked, and there was an old rifle in there, a 30-40 Krag, but no shells for it, but there were some 30-30 shells. So anyway,
did you have any guns with you?
No, we didn't have any guns with us at all. We'd moved in there without any guns or any ammunition. We cooked in one tent, lived in another, and we had a couple of raids by bears on the cook tent. They sort of got in when we were away working and knocked over the stove and bit some holes in the cans and so forth, but we sort of managed to live with that. But one night, it was about maybe 11 o'clock. We were sleeping under bed nets with as little clothes on as possible because it was warm. We had shorts on. Two of us were sleeping near the head of the tent, near the door. And I looked out the door, and there was a bear about 10 feet from the tent. The fellow that was camp who was sleeping on the other side of the tent from me, there was a bear about 10 feet from him. So I told Bob, I said, "There's a bear there." And we looked out of the tent and hollered, and Huber was in the back, and he got kind of excited, all right. But we hollered, and the bear would go away, and he kept coming back. Well, alongside of the tent in front were, and along the side and in front of the tent, there were some dog houses there. And which apparently had something to do with the cabin. The fellow that was living in the cabin no doubt had dogs and was trapping. And this bear kept coming back all the time, and finally Kemp decided, he'd go out. There was an axe behind the tent. Why we had it behind the tent, I'll never know, but he said he was going to go out and get the axe, see what he could do about the bear. So we'd hollered, the bear run off and some brush, and then Kemp goes out the front of the tent and runs around the back, and he grabs an axe. And about that time, the bear saw him in back of the tent, so he went back of the tent, and I ran out the door, grabbed the big club and jumped up on one of the dog houses. And the bear went up to Kemp, and Bob swung at him with the axe, a double-bitted axe, and it turned in his hand, so he hit the bear on the side of the head with the flat of the axe. Well, the bear then started back towards me, and as he went by me, I hit him over the right back of the head with his club. Well, that kind of made him feel a little sore, I guess, and no doubt a little angered at his reception. So anyway, I go back to the tent, and Kemp comes around and decides, we better go over there to that head for that cabin. So Huber, he was outside the tent, and we were barefoot, and there was a little mud around, and Kemp started off for the cabin, he and Huber, and for some reason, I'll never know why what prompted me to do it. But I hollered to him, and I says, "Come back," and I jumped under, pulled my duffel bag out from underneath the bed, and I threw him a pair of safety goggles. And I thought, these guys were barefooted, and I'm not very good at running around barefooted, and it's silk, and there was rocks in it, and they were taking it off, so I was going to put on my shoe packs, but I couldn't get them out from underneath the bed in time, so they got over to the cabin before I did, and I started across, and the bear came out about that time, and they were at the cabin, and we had our cat parked in front, near the cabin in front, and some oil barrels there. So the only thing for me to do, I headed for the tractor. They got to the cabin, and I made it for the tractor. Well, I didn't get on the tractor, but the bear was chasing me around the tractor. He'd go one way, and then I'd go another. And Bob went in the cabin, and he got this old 30-40 Craig rifle. And he got the 30-30, some 30-30 shells. Well, the caliber, the bore's right, but the shells don't chamber right. Then I hollered at him, I says, "Put on your goggles, put on your," so he did. And when the bear would get in proper position, he had let fire with that. Mm-hmm. All right, and gee, there'd be a flame come out of the end of the barrel about that long, but the bullet wasn't doing any good. You could just hear him hit the bear, thunk, like that.
Make it a little better.
And the bear would stand up on his hind feet, you know, and when he'd at me, he'd come at me like this, you know, and then I'd run away around the tractor, you know. He'd follow me around for a while, and he'd get tired of following me, so he'd go, he'd start kind of wise, he'd go back the other way, and then I'd meet him, you know, and he'd be going, and he was showing his teeth. And
barefooted?
Oh yeah, barefooted, hell yes, and full of mud and lots of mosquitoes, you know, and we were pretty well, all I had on, any of us had on, were just a pair of shorts.
But anyway,
after a while, after several shots, why the bear, he just got disgusted, you know, with us. And he'd getting stung so many times, he just walked off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by the time we got through with all this escapade, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and it started about 11 o'clock in the evening.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it wasn't anything, you know, that took place all, you know, in a short period of time.
Yeah.
So then I went to Ruby in the morning.
Well, where were you? Where was your camp?
We were about 15 miles out of Ruby on Beaver Creek,
mm-hmm.
on the road between Ruby and Long. How'd
you get into the plant? Do you have a pickup? Or?
Well, we drove out on the road 15 miles, or 13 miles, and then we took a cat and go devil and went down Beaver Creek about 2.5-3 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So we were somewhere 15, 16 miles out of Ruby. So anyway, the next morning I walked up to, we had a truck parked on the highway, on the road, so I walked up to the road and we drove into Ruby and got a rifle from Mame Olson, borrowed a 30-30 from her, brought it out, and the next, in the morning, we went to bed early that night, we had the rifle laid on the floor between the bunks, and I woke up about 5 o'clock and there was a bear right in front of the tent. So Bob shot two of them that following morning, laying in
two
bed.
Bears?
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah, laying in bed.
The bear brought back reinforcements.
Yeah, I don't know. We couldn't tell which one it was. But anyway, after that business, we decided we'd move into cabin. So we got busy and we picked out the door good so we could open it. And
sure.
Took our tents down, we laid them over the roof and, you know, fixed up, moved in. And we decided, well, we'd have a big feed, so this took us a couple of days, we just decided that morning, well, we were going to move in the cabin, so we fixed it up, you know. And we decided we'd have a big feed, so I went in the Ruby and got some fresh meat and we cooked, that night we cooked up a bunch of steaks and had a big feed, and we had the door, it was about 6 inches up to the floor and the door would swing open, so we were going to leave the door open because it was warm and we had a piece of screen hanging up there, it was a piece of cheesecloth, like, mm-hmm. hanging there, you know. And we had a washstand right by the door, and we had our slop bucket there. But Bob had cooked up these steaks, and when he got through them, he threw the bones, he put the bones in a bag and threw them in this slop pail. See? And we were laying in bed, and I was laying right alongside of a window, and I saw this big shadow go by. And I said to Bob, I says, there's a bear. So he grabbed the rifle, jumped up out of bed, and the bear stuck his head in the door, you know. And it was kind of dark in there to him because it was light outside, and we looked all around. But he smelled the bones in that bag in the slop bucket, so he grabbed that and took it out, and he was laying right in front of the door, about 5 or 6 feet from the door, so we got another one.
Is that another?
We got another bear. Yeah, we had to liquidate that one, so we had
three of them right in a row.
We had four.
Yeah.
We didn't know whether, we had that first one that I don't think ever came back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We had four in a matter of couple of days.
But there's three of them you shot.
Yeah, we had to. Well, you had to. There was nothing else we could do.
I'd like to have seen that, or him running around barefoot.
Well, one of the classic things was that when I'd been to town all about maybe a month before, and Bob wanted a pair of shorts. So I went into to
Cars
and down here on 2nd Avenue down there. Mm-hmm. Bought about a couple of pair of shorts, and one of the pairs of shorts had written over the back, "Get the lead out," you know, big black letters. And Bob had these shorts on, you know, he was running across there to that cabin and get the lead out.
That would have been something to see.
Well, after that, did you take a rifle with you when you went out in the Tules?
Well, we usually had a rifle. I don't know. I finally sent into town, got my own. Yeah. You sent it down to me. I don't know why. Bob used to carry a handgun, you know, the 40-40, a 44 Magnum, but he never had that. We never had anything.
For a while when you were going out, though, you didn't take any guns with you. I think it was after that you started taking a gun with you all the time.
Well, on some other trips when we were down on the coast, we had a rifle. Mm-hmm. But I've traveled miles and miles without in Alaska
never
alone.
Never carried a gun.
Never carried a gun. Mm-hmm. Never carried a gun.
That summer you had the Wanigan out here on the highway, you had a lot of bear around too, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Never had a gun there either.
Wasn't that the summer that Bill Strandberg got killed with a bear?
Yeah.
No. There were an awful lot of them. Yeah,
the same summer that Bob, that Don Himes got bit in the head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sleeping out alongside the Chattanooga River. And he came in and knocked on the door the next morning. Jesus, he was chewed up all over.
Mm. It wasn't on the Chattanooga, it was out on the Livengood Road.
Tall Man?
No.
Tatalina?
Tatalina.
Yeah, that's
Tatalina.
Right.
Who was that?
Don Himes. Friend of Terry's.
He's sleeping on the ground in his bedroll. If it hadn't been for the cook on that survey crew.
Well, is he the Don Himes who's lives here in town now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know him. Yeah. His wife's name Rita.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he got had the highway department, or well, I guess it was the road commission. Then they had a survey crew up there, mm-hmm. and the cook. It was early in the morning, around 5 o'clock, and the cook saw the bear going over towards Don's sleeping bag. So he got his rifle, and by the time when the bear started to maul Don, he got out there and killed him. Otherwise, Don would have been in pretty tough shape.
Yeah.
So he has a scar right here by the eye. It's a wonder he never lost his eye where the bear bit him, right there.
Yeah, and his forehead was all chewed up.
And then he had a couple of holes in his arm. Mm-hmm.
Flying in his sleeping bag. Yeah. Bear came up and started on.
Well, the bear apparently smelled him on the face or something, and he took his arm out of the sleeping bag in order to
brush
it away, not knowing what it was apparently, and the bear bit him in the arm the first time.
Do you remember Ed Jano, who lived down here on the river?
Oh, sure, sure.
I did a historical tape with him, 73, I guess it was. And I asked him if he ever had any bear problems, and he told me a fantastic story. I mean, the guy was would never elaborate. In fact, he was so modest, he just didn't want to even talk about himself. But he was over, I guess, on Jack Wade or somewhere in there.
Yeah.
No, he had to go to Jack Wade was where the post office was, and he was on the 40 mile. It was about a 20-mile hike to go wherever it was he was, where his cabin was. Mm-hmm. Get the mail. So he went over and they had a lot of newspapers and he was walking back and he had this backpack and just crammed full of mail and a lot of newspapers. And he ran into this big brown bear going up over one of those big high domes with no trees. He said there wasn't anything around, no weapon, he didn't have a gun. And the only thing he could find was a piece of wood that had been burned. He said took a whack at the bear. The bear just kept coming and smelling him, you know, and he took a whack at the bear and the thing just disintegrated. And the bear just knocked him down. And he said he was just petrified. He didn't know what to do. He had no weapon. And the bear had knocked him down, so he was on his back, and he said he just closed his eyes and prayed. He could just feel that bear's snout right in his face. Mm-hmm. He said he could feel his big he had his arms up kind of mm-hmm. like this, and he said he could feel the legs of the bear. But I said, well, why didn't the bear bite you? And he said, well, he was smelling something. I said, well, what could he have been smelling? He said, well, I had a chaw of tobacco in my mouth. So he apparently the bear smelled this tobacco. And it was an odd odor. I said, well, what happened? How'd you make out? And he said, well, there wasn't a thing I could do. And he said, I just spit for all I was worth. And I guess it landed right in that bear's eyes. And he said, pretty soon the bear was gone. I didn't feel his breath, or I could tell he was gone. He said, I opened one eye and looked, and opened both eyes. He said he was so petrified he didn't want to move, and he's still lying like this, you know, kind of looking around. And that old bear was backing down the incline, just backing away. But he had spit that tobacco in his eyes. Fantastic story. I got it on TV. Really, he said he did have some matches with him. He didn't smoke, but he had some matches with him. He said, the only thing I could think of was to reach back slowly and get a newspaper and light it. It was all wound up. He said, I just lit that newspaper and made a torch out of it. He said, if the bear came back, I would have some kind of
something,
weapon.
Something, yeah.
But he said that he kept an eye on that old bear and kind of inched his way along, and the bear kept backing away. And pretty soon he got to the top of the crest, and he took off. And so the last he saw of the bear, he was still... They're just backing away
because
chaw of tobacco him, saved his life. Mm-hmm. Isn't that an unusual thing?
Oh, it's unusual, all right. But I can see where you know, tobacco juice in your eye would be, you know.
It'd be pretty caustic.
Yeah. Well, that little boy down there in Juneau, you know, who was blinded by a bear, you know, clawed him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've read Olus Murray's books on bears, you know, but I don't quite agree with them.
It says they won't attack you or something?
Well, yeah, they have territorial rights, you know, the darn critters. You happen to be around where they, they run there.
Yeah.
This is the problem, you know.
You get into their, cross their path.
Oh yeah, you get into their territory. They'll run off another bear too, you know.
Sure. That's why, you know, Jim was saying Fred Dean goes down at the park and he walks around and never has a gun or anything. Well, Fred Dean knows what, he's a naturalist, wildlife expert. He knows a bear trail. He knows better than to bother a bear.
He just doesn't,
You know, they can tell.
Doesn't get in their territory.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. But when you get into their territory, then
you're just like a dog barks when another dog comes in the yard, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Well, in any of your travels when you were mining, before, did you ever get lost?
No, but I've been real uncomfortable. I can't say that I was actually lost. I've got. Been weathered in. I've sat on the hillside for a long time, you know, waiting for it to clear up so I can know my direction, you know,
mm-hmm.
many times. And I've been real uncomfortable. But it's impossible to, you know, cover a lot of the country on foot like I have or did years ago, you know, without having some concerns.
Get a little bit twisted once in a while.
Well, in 1935 and 36, when you were getting into mining, what transportation did you use?
I was on foot. Well, they'd fly, they'd use an airplane to get as close to any area in which I was going to make an examination, and then
most of your work was. Mining, assessing, or just checking?
Well, I was one of the engineers at Coal Creek and involved with thawing and stripping and dredging. And then I'd also make examinations of mineral deposits. No looking for. A lot of mine, a lot of the examinations I'd make would be a reconnaissance type, you know.
But then in 35, when you got out of college, there were a lot of airplanes here too. So you had airplane travel to, from here to Cold Creek.
Sure.
But you also did a lot of hoofing it over the hills by yourself.
Oh yeah, you bet. The pack and on my back.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to have a nickel for every mile you walk, Paul.
You know, we used to spend days walking someplace and then only work maybe. Spend a week getting there and a couple of days there and a week getting back, you know. Like when I was down on the Custer equipment on the Tonzona and over in that neck of the woods, you know, walk for miles and miles.
Did you ever use dog teams?
Yeah, in the winter time. Mostly when there's prospecting. Haul the outfit with.
I saw some dogs tied up last week. I went to Anvik and there were two fellows over there who had dog teams. They were fishing, catching chum salmon like mad, drying them for dog teams.
Anvik?
At Anvik, yeah. And they're racing teams. Hmm. They were joking, some of the other. I flew over with Doyon and Tanama Chiefs. They had a big flood there in May. And there's a couple from McGrath, a couple Indian fellows. They were giving, chiding these guys about their slow teams. Were they ever going to win a race?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know if they're ever going to win, but they had a good time racing.
Yeah.
But they're not very many dog teams around anymore. Very few.
They can give away to the snow machines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that winter I was up the Charlie River, we had dogs before.
You and Jack Ellis?
Jack Ellis and Roy Moore and I.
Yeah.
Charlie River, is that the one out of,
below?
Goes into 40 Mile?
Runs into Yukon. It's between
runs
Circle
into
and
Yukon, yeah.
That's about half, not quite halfway between Circle and Eagle.
Yeah, and then flows
north.
But you cross it when you come in from Chicken.
Well,
you're
flying in from Chicken, you could cross the headwaters of the
Charlie.
Of the Charlie, yeah. Well, if you're going to go direct to Eagle, you'd cross over the headwaters of the Charlie. It all depends on, you know.
I guess I haven't crossed over. Wow. I've flown it. Maybe I've just read it on the map.
Yeah, we prospected there. Well, it was cold. We lived in a tent that winter.
That was the winter?
Oh, yeah, it was in the wintertime. We were sinking holes up there. And we had some fresh eggs and fresh potatoes. We had a lot of dried stuff too. And we used to take the potatoes and eggs to bed with us. and get up in the morning and all the potatoes and the eggs on the outside, next to the outside of the sweetened bag, would be frozen. So we'd take those out and keep them frozen, you know. And finally we just ended up with a few thawed potatoes and a few thawed eggs. Well, it was 70 below that winter.
Holy smoke, were you living in tents?
Yeah, we were living in tents, yeah, sure.
Who was with you then?
Well, there was a fellow named Roy Moran, who was down in, I guess he's in Portland now.
Yeah, we saw him someplace.
There was a fellow named Jack Ellis.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't Jack a fire chief here one time?
Yeah, he was fire chief here. He went out to Washington, I don't know what became of him.
Well, Charlotte, did you ever go out on any of these excursions with him, or
not the
walking expeditions?
I used to go out in the summertime all the time when he was out working out in the creeks.
Did you spend the summers there?
Mm-hmm. She used to live in a tent, too.
That was my first experience living in a tent.
Did you ever have any bear problems?
No.
You yourself?
Uh-uh. Mm-hmm.
Well, Jim, tell me... Tell me about that time you were down the Yukon near Nulato when Tom March.
Oh, that was down.
Tell me about that. For get the details on it. You know,
like
Jim March.
Oh, sure.
That was Tom, the oldest boy. We were just walking on a road down in Cook Inlet, you know, on the.
Oh, it was a Tionic
River. Huh? Somebody drilled a well in there, and so. We were out there floundering around in the brush with a pet, you know, and they were marking the trail to where a cat could make it from the Cook Inlet back in 7 or 8 miles to where their drill location was. The size work had been done, you know, and so forth in the preceding winter. And there were quite a few bears there, and they kept mashing our tent down and eating the ground. You know, I think we had about 4 slabs of bacon, and the bears got all of them. We didn't get any.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere we went, there were bears. So one night we were just Tom. He was about 20 then. I think he was out of school. I forgot, he might have still been going to school. But we went a long way, and we went to do a lot that day, and we overdid it, and then bang, and we came home. Everything was flat on the ground, the tent.
Did you take your hat off and jump up and down with it?
No. Put the tent up again. That took us. It was about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning before we finally got to bed. Tom had the rifle. He was right next to the door of the tent. And I was in the back.
Yeah.
And the bear came and he shot him right from the bed, you know. And the bad part was we had to bury him, you know. We had to dig a hole for him.
What'd you have to bury him for? No environmentalists around, were there?
No, we had to
give him a proper burial?
Yeah.
Put a marker up?
We got one to stay there.
We used to, with one, we ever got a bear, we had to take the cat out. And dig
yeah,
out.
Yeah.
We always buried
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
We always. But we, when I was in Tofty, we had an outhouse there. It had a door in the front, but it was open in the back. So it didn't make, of course, it was, the road was in front too, so there was not too much danger of anybody coming around the back. It was kind of a swampy back there. Yeah, so I went out there one morning and was comfortably seated, and I looked around, and about 5 feet away from me was a bear. Now, I tell you, if somebody tells you that you can't run with your pants down, I'll tell you it's going to be I come out of that door, I tell you, just let the guys off him. I let out a baller, and Tony come running out with his rifle, and that ended that bear, so thank goodness for that. So I had to have a bear on the cookhouse, but you can't have him running the outhouse.
Is anybody mining in Tofty now?
Yeah, Bob Miller.
Oh, is he mining?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On Tofty Gulch.
How long has he been mining there? Well, he bought some property.
Yeah, he bought McGee. L.B. McGee's.
Yeah, that's right. I remember hearing that.
Jack Neubauer's there with him, for him. Mm-hmm. Jack runs a camp there.
When I went to Nenana a week and a half ago now, it was on Sunday, I stopped at Beck's. Bob Beck, do you know Bob?
Oh, yeah.
And Bob was out working in his equipment, and so I was in the house talking to his wife, Betty. So I went out, and when I went out, there was Bob Beck leaning against the pickup, which was dirty, almost as dirty as he was. And he'd been all greasy, you know. And there was Bob Miller, surprised to see him. But they finished their conversation, and Bob Miller got in his car and took off real fast. I hope it wasn't my presence, but my man.
I probably just did work. Where is Bob gonna move now that he sold it out in Manly Hot Springs? What's he gonna do with all that junk?
He sold out in Manly?
He was going to sell his house there. He has a house there.
Beautiful long house.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know about... Well, he was going to keep his storage yard there. Uh-huh. But he's just going to sell it.
Is it true that he really moved a lot of that junk out there in Manly?
Moved half of it down in Manly, yeah.
Well, not half of it. Well, he just had a small track there.
Yeah. It looked like an awful lot.
He's got quite a bit of equipment there, secondhand equipment, used equipment. And I think he probably moved it down in relation to his mining operation.
Yeah.
Spare parts and sort of thing.
Did they stop mining there, or did he give up on the mining?
No. I just wanted to sell his house and his property there in town.
Mm-hmm. Is Delima, Don still there?
Yeah, Don is still there. He's working over at American Creek.
Oh, my God.
What are you working for there?
He's working on his own there.
Yeah, he's working on his own, yeah.
Is there property there? Did he buy the property?
Well, he bought some claims, I think, that... Paul that used to work for Bob Miller. He was a mechanic over there for a long time. Tall, dark-haired fellow. Yeah.